Hey guys, I've got Hunter McCamey here with me. I am Chris Adams, and we're gonna talk about fishing. We're gonna talk about using the rod blank, the components, why we did what we did, and how it translates to out on the water.
Absolutely, and like you said, in the rod building segment, we covered aspects such as power and action, choosing the correct blank, selecting the right components, etc. And we even covered some tips and tricks on how to install a decal.
Yes.
But we're going to switch gears now. If you haven't seen that video, check it out, obviously. But this one, we're going to be talking a little more on the fishing and angling side of a drop shot. So I'm going to give a little backstory on how I came to actually fish a drop shot for the first time.
Well, you're not from here.
And that's kind of a good,
right?
Good.
Is that where we're
exactly.
going?
Exactly. That's kind of where we're going with it. So yeah, you're correct. I grew up in Tennessee, and in 2010, I moved down to Florida.
Okay.
My dad had a house down here on the St. John's River on Lake Harney, and
the Blue Bungalow.
Yes, exactly.
That place was it.
And for those that are not familiar with Florida, drop shot in Florida, typically those two things don't go together.
Yeah, I can hear everybody kind of going like,
yeah, what does it make sense? So funny enough, spent a couple years learning the river, St. John's, fishing mostly grass and vegetation, power fishing, swim jig, big easy from Gambler, things like that. But, I decided to learn a few different techniques, just really trying to learn, fishing in general, but also Florida. And I decided to give drop shot a whirl. I actually watched a couple of videos from Aaron Martins, who, unfortunately has passed away now, but
he was the king.
He was the king of drop shot, finesse fishing, those types of things. And I watched a lot of videos about how to drop shot out in California and all these clear lakes and things like that. And
yeah, when you go, what is a robo worm?
Yeah, well, funny you say that. Of course, Aaron was a big proponent of robo worms, great finesse bait, drop shot bait. So I picked up a pack of robo worms, some, one alt or size one mosquito hooks is what I had available at the time. And, I had I think it was a DS-822 is what I built up, or an SB-812, one of those two. Very similar blanks, but both are great for drop shotting.
Yeah.
Built up a drop shot rod, spooled up my braid with a fluorocarbon leader, all those good things. Tied up my drop shot rig and went out on the St. John's River. Might have been one of the first people to ever throw a drop shot on the St. John's River.
You're getting weird looks. People running by you going, what is he doing?
Yeah, me and my dad in a aluminum boat, and I wanted to go catch a fish on a drop shot in the St. John's River. Funny enough, didn't catch many that day, but we hit a couple of our really good spots out there up and down the mud banks that you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And actually hooked up on like a 6-pounder that day. And from there on out, I can't say that a drop shot is a staple in my, arsenal when I'm tournament fishing or bass fishing, but on super tough days, don't be afraid to pull out a drop shot. Even if you're fishing in, somewhere in the south like Florida or one of the lakes up and down the Tennessee River that has grass in the summertime, things like that. Drop shot can be that bait and that technique that, you might catch numbers, but you also might catch a 5, a 6, a 7 pounder on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, I have used it more places outside of Florida than I have inside of Florida. And I think, I will say, it's probably going to be tough to get somebody on like Gunnersville or, Wheeler or something to pick up a drop shot in the summer when they're trying to throw like a frog. I don't think we're going to call Daniel Douglas and have him pick up a drop shot in the summer. But all the other times, yeah, it's for sure a staple. And of course, I'm not going to leave home without a drop shot rod, no matter the time of year. But, some of my first experiences with the drop shot was up on Smith Lake in mm-hmm. Alabama. And that was weird for me because all of our lakes down here are maybe 15 feet deep, maybe. And up there at Smith Lake, we were working through some areas and we would fish brush piles or like long taper points that are 25, 30 feet deep. And then right on the edge of it goes to 100 or 200.
Right.
So that was interesting. And some of the first baits that I had also was a robo worm. And I was actually fishing a Bass Open as a co-angler. And this was in like 2012 fall, like October time frame. And for those that have fished a Bass Open, I was a co-angler, which I don't think they even have anymore, right?
I'm not sure. They might have.
I think they dropped the co-anglers. But so you would get a draw, and there were 200 boaters and 200 co-anglers, and you'd meet, you'd fish 2 days, they'd give you a draw, and you know, you have one guy one day, and then you fish another guy the next day, and if you make the cut, then you fish on the final day. And I believe back then they cut it to 12. Yeah. So my first open as a co-angler out at Smith Lake, I made the cut, and it was mainly because of a drop shot. So I had fished with Cliff Crochet on the first day. Then I drew a local kid who was fishing for actually the University of Alabama at the time, which you ended up meeting him.
Yes.
So where Cliff Crochet did not drop shot. He's like a Louisiana boy. We threw frogs and we threw buzz baits and we threw like spooks and things like that. So I was prepared to go out there with a drop shot. And I actually also built a DSA-22 because your dad said to build a DSA-22 at the time. And I remember building it. I had like the arrow reel seat on it. And those just, that component was, that was just what we did. That was the best that we had then. And I remember going out there the second day. Peyton's like, hey, we're going to drop shot. And I was like, okay, I think I have that down. You know, like I can tie 10-pound braid to a light leader fluorocarbon. That's not a problem. We did that in saltwater and had no issue. But just, you know, he's watching a graph, although there was no forward-facing sonar, none of that stuff. But he's watching a graph, and I'm kind of just along for the ride, you know? And at the time, I think I just had, like, some Zoom trick worms or something because I just didn't know, you know, what we were doing. And he pulls out this robo worm in a color called Morning Dawn, and he had, like, three packs. And he caught a limit and had a really, really solid limit. And I only had like one fish. And he turns around and he's like, I can't let you sit back there while I just kill him on Morning Dawn. And like, I didn't know to bring that color. And like, what, you know, what's the chance, right? So he gives me a pack and he's like, we only had a 3-fish limit.
Mm-hmm.
They had a 5-fish limit. So he's like, for you to make the final day, you probably are going to need about, you know, this number. And I was like, okay. And we picked and moved a spot, and I bet in 15 minutes, I went from like one squeaker to about that number that I thought we needed to make the cut. Because I had a pretty like okay first day doing something completely different and like really, you know, piled it on there with the drop shot. But he was then like, all right, well, you know, like, you get the rest of that last bag, but I got to, you know, I got to try to catch. So he ended up not making the cut, but he had a pretty good bag and made a check. And I actually, like, at the very end of the day, we went to a long point over like 90 foot of water, and I caught a big fish on a spook that was kind of like a, we went there and it was like, it's going to be this or nothing. And I did catch a good spotted bass on a spook in deep water. Came in and I was in 10th, and then I got back and I was had a traveling buddy and he was like, what'd you catch him on? I'm like, drop shot. And he's like, what color? And I was like, Morning Dawn robo worm. And he's like, what? You know, he was from Florida too.
Yeah.
And like, we knew what it was, but like, we just didn't have it. So we start calling around and we call like the place in Coleman and we all over. And we call all the way back to Birmingham at Bass Pro Shops. And I'm like, do you guys have any robo worms in Morning Dawn? And the guy's like, I got 3 packs. And I was like, I'm on my way. Yeah. It was an hour drive.
Pull them off the peg. Hold them.
That was it. And he was like, well, my name's Dave. I'll have them behind the counter. And I was like, sweet. Hold them. And we booked it, got there, and I bought all 3 packs. And the final day, I went from 10th to 5th. And I actually fished with Greg Vincent, who's still fishing these days. And it was weird because I actually saw Greg at ICAST this past year. He had a newborn child when we fished at Smith Lake. And then like I saw his kid and I'm like, you're like 14 years old, you know, and Greg's like a tall guy, you know? And like his 12-year-old is like this tall, and I'm like, oh man, now I feel kind of old. But yeah, it was, I think now I, you know, from going back to the building segment, knowing that the DS-822 is like, if you don't know anything about drop shotting, like we both had no idea about drop shotting all those years ago, there's a reason that it's the DS-822.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the beauty of drop shotting. You hit on a couple good points there. When it gets tough, and especially if you're a co-angler, you're in the back of the boat, and
yeah,
you know, for one, you can fish in almost any depth of water, right? Even 5 foot or less, you can still fish a drop shot. I know a lot of guys, even, you know, when it comes bed fishing season here in Florida,
yeah,
there's a lot of guys that, you know, they might not call it a drop shot, but that's kind of the technique they're using. They're using a weight that's on the bottom and a lure that's, you know,
suspended bait.
A suspended bait that's above that lure.
It might be on like 20-pound fluoro with a 1 ounce sinker.
Yes, yeah.
As opposed to like an 1/8 ounce little tungsten teardrop and a mosquito hook, but it's the same thing.
Exactly. And there are different variations. I think there's, you know, the power shotting, I think is a very, you know, a name for a heavier type of drop shotting.
They have like a Tokyo rig or something that's actually, yeah, the weight is actually on the hook.
Yep.
You know, so it kind of gives like a weird like hinging.
Yep. But yeah, any, you know, any depth of water, whether it's 2 or 3 feet, 5 foot, and like you said, all the way out to 20, 30, 50 foot of water, if you find fish, you know, you can probably catch them with a drop shot, and especially when conditions are super tough. And you mentioned, you know, Smith Lake, that is a very clear, I think it's a blueback herring lake.
It is, it's a herring lake.
So, you know, you're talking about spotted bass that are very finicky, tough to catch in, yep, most cases. And going to that finesse approach, like a drop shot rig, that's money. That's the ticket. Yeah. So,
and it is funny because you're right. I forgot that it was a herring lake, but it's weird because you look down at the deck and one rod has like a 4-inch bone colored Zaraspook on it.
Right.
The other rod has like a bull shad that's, you know, 1 1/4 ounces.
Swim bait.
Giant jointed swim bait. And then you have a drop shot and you're like,
yeah, how do we get from there to there?
What? Yeah, for sure. And you're fishing them either together or like pretty close by, or, you know, it's for me being in Florida, it's a wild experience.
Yeah.
To be throwing top water over 90 foot and then be like, oh, we're going to go shallow. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And he's like, it's 22 feet.
It's shallow.
Shallow. Cool. Get the drop shot rod out.
So we talked about the rod. Obviously, you know, you can tell that the DS-822, that's our go-to. There's plenty of other blanks that will fit the bill, but if I were had to pick one, or we were to pick one,
yeah,
DS-822. So we've got our rod covered, and again, we've talked about the rod building in a different segment. Let's move on. Let's talk about reel size, line, things like that. So for me personally, I'm going to be using, you know, a 2500 size reel. Some guys bump up to a 3000. That just depends on, you know, line capacity and things like that. But 2500 size reel, going to be perfect. I'm usually running, you know, either 10 pound, maybe 12 to 15 pound braid to a fluorocarbon leader, right? And that could be 8 pound, 6 pound, 10 pound. That's going to vary depending on where you're fishing. If I'm fishing the St. John's, I can get away with probably 10 pound fluorocarbon very easily. Now, if we're going up to Smith Lake, different story, right? We're going to be going 100%. Down to probably six pound to be safe. So that's my typical setup, you know, reel, line, and that sort of things. What you got going on, Chris?
Yeah, I'm the same way, really. I mean, I've always kind of been like a Shimano guy. I fish the Stradic. I mean, it's nice because I can just walk downstairs and be like, we can match reel sizes up. You know, we carry, you know, Daiwa stuff. We carry Florida Fishing Product stuff. We carry Shimano stuff. So I've always been a Stradic guy, and I use them in saltwater. So even though it might be a little like overkill for freshwater, might be a little high dollar, I like the feel of it. And I'm with you. I'm a 2500 size. But I did notice, you know, when I did go out to Smith, the braid wasn't as much of a like, you had kind of a 50-50 crowd. You had some guys that are like, I only throw braid to leader. And then there's some guys that like, I only fish fluorocarbon. But the braid to leader guys, and the fluorocarbon guys, they weren't arguing over the fact that like the fish see the braid because they run like 6-7 foot leaders.
Sure.
They were just more like, no, I like the hookup ratio this better, or I like the flex better in this, or I fish a lighter rod or one that has a little bit of a softer with the braid. Or somebody's like, no, I don't like that particular action, so I fish it this way, but I use the fluorocarbon only. So at Smith, it wasn't so much of like, you know, oh, you show up with braid and leader and that's a problem. Now, I mean, in saltwater, I'm using 10-pound braid to like 12-pound leader, but the 10-pound braid to probably 8 or 6 is, you know, kind of my drop shot when I'm going to use it. And we had talked about guides earlier, you know, and not to like jump too far ahead on that, but you know, when you're choosing your line, you also need to kind of think about what you're going to do in terms of guides, because if you have that line to lead or not, you know, can you use 5s? Do you have to use 6s? You know, Fuji makes a 4.5, but not everybody does, but then you have 4s. So it's interesting when, you know, and we've said this before, when you build a rod, it's always nice to have the reel that you're going to use. And then in your head, like, what is your preferred like tactic? Because it, you do meet guys around here that are like, even with a casting reel, guys are like, I am always a braid to leader guy. And then like our other buddies, like I throw straight fluoro on it, you know? So if you have already those like plans in your head, that's why we build custom rods. We build it because of that. So, I mean, for me, I am not a straight fluorocarbon guy. I don't think I need to be, and I never have been, you know? I mean, we went up and fished with Matt Steffen, and some particular, you know, things he's going to throw straight fluorocarbon.
Hmm, interesting.
But they still have lakes with grass in them, just like we do. But then they also have, like, big, vast expanses of nothingness and just, like, a little rock pile.
Right.
With a 6-pound smallmouth sitting on it. So it's like, you could fish 4-pound on him.
Yep.
Just make sure your drag set right.
Because exactly.
He's gonna let it eat. So yeah, I'm a braid to leader guy, but if I wasn't, I would probably then drop down.
And you know, you mentioned fishing up in some of those, you know, northern states, such as like Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. Yeah. You know, drop shotting up there can be very, very different than say drop shotting in, you know, at Smith Lake in Alabama or places like that, especially up on those, you know, expansive flats, like you mentioned. A lot of those guys, they're looking for, you know, how far can they cast it, right? You know, because they're having to stay pretty far off of those rock piles and those smallmouth. Smallmouth are very, very smart fish. They feel that boat pressure. So most, you know, and those guys, again, they're staying off of those rock piles. They're obviously making very specific cast to a target,
yeah.
But they're also having to make a very long cast. So, you know, it's common to see, you know, not a 6'10 drop shot rod up there, but a 7'2, a 7'3. And I've even seen some guys go up to a 7'4, 7'6 drop shot rod.
Yeah.
And mainly that is to get those longer casts. You know, a 7'6 rod compared to a 6'10 rod, we know the 7'6 is going to be able to cast farther. So,
yeah, because I think in the building segment, I did mention the NSJ 871, which I believe is in Matt Steffen's signature series.
I believe so. I believe so.
So that's going to be, you know, 871, 87 inches. So that's going to be 7'3 and a 1-power. So yeah, he did. We're fishing a DS 822, a little shorter with a 2-power. He's fishing a little longer with a 1-power because he doesn't have to worry about, most of the time, doesn't have to worry about anything around. So yeah, that's a good point. Not to backtrack too much in terms of blanks, but yeah, that is a really great point. We mentioned that in the building segment on this.
So we talked about the reel, we talked about the line. Let's talk a little bit about the bait selection. We hit on it earlier.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we're going to be using either a size 2, a size 1, maybe like a 1.0. Mosquito hook, drop shot hook. There are a million different variations of a drop shot hook these days. More importantly, though, is the bait. You know, robo worm it's going to take the cake most of the time.
Yeah, because that's robo worm is a hand poured.
It is. Yep.
Floating style.
Yes.
Worm, and you can, you know, when we talk about a hand poured worm, that's pretty much the ones that one side has like contour and ribbing and stuff, and the other side is completely flat. So typically when you have a hand poured worm, you're not putting them in like a plunger with two pieces creating like a mold. You're typically it's like a flat mold that you're pouring into, like, you know, and it settles down, and that's why it's flat.
Absolutely.
And those are your floating worms most of the time.
So robo worms, that's a staple when drop shotting, but it didn't stop there. Like you mentioned earlier, a Zoom trick worm would suffice just fine.
And they have like four different types of trick worms now.
Exactly. Any type of straight tail worm that has a decent action to it. Typically, you want that worm to float so that it has, you know, stays off the bottom a little bit. Now, straight tail worms, again, doesn't stop there either.
Right.
A lot of guys in the northern states and lakes, they fish goby style baits because gobies are very popular bait fish in some of those northern areas. There's some people that will fish a little small creature bait on a drop shot. So you can kind of go wild with it. It's not just it has to be this or it has to be that. Straight tail worm, I would say, is probably the go-to for a lot of people. But you can get creative and put a crawl on there or put some kind of little swim bait or goby bait on there and probably going to get bit.
I would say, since the 12 or 13 years from when I started drop shotting till now, and I don't do it as much as I used to because I'm in saltwater so much, but I still, I think back to be like, oh, all I need is like robo worm this. And then, we'll catch like in passing, one of our buddies that we remember is fishing on the Elite Series now, or he's fishing at MPFL or something. And they're like, oh, what won it? And it's like, oh, this drop shot bait. And it's like, oh, look. And it's like, we didn't have that drop shot bait back then, or we didn't think to do that.
Right.
Or, you were talking about the hooks, and especially in Florida, at one point in time, we didn't have a lot of, a Texas rigged, weedless rigged drop shot.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it was all a nose hook with like a mosquito hook or, a wacky rig hook, but on a drop shot. And it was just nose hooking. So you kind of had like an exposed situation. You get it in a brush pile and you're like, yes, that's a mess. So, a lot of those guys on the TVA lakes and even some of the South Carolina lakes where they have all that like flooded timber and stuff. And then even down here, we got to the point where we were throwing a size 2 or a 1 Texas rig hook
right
into a drop shot bait. Real fine wire and stuff. We're not throwing like our regular 30, 40 heavy cover worm hooks, but we're then Texas rigging them. So that is another reason that we choose like, a 2-power, something that's not the lightest, because not only are we doing it because of where we fish and to slide fish away from cover, but if we're fishing a weedless style bait, we also have to get the hook through the plastic and then into the fish. So we have to have a little more, midsection and butt section power so that when we do set the hook on that fish, it's a mixture of, we're not going to break 8-pound fluoro, but we got to make sure, or straighten a hook, but we have to make sure that we stick that fish. Whereas, if you've got I remember the first time watching, the guy's got a single open hook and it's just out the nose of that bait and it's just like,
yeah, there he is. Yeah, like, exactly. Yep.
Okay. All right. Good for you. I'm used to like rearing back on a 65-pound braid.
Give it all you got.
Yeah. And letting him have it. But yeah, that's for bait wise, don't like go wild. There's nothing there. Now there's something earlier that we talked about when, in the building series for guides. And there's one thing, especially with these kits now, because we haven't had kits like this really ever, but we were using the Tie Forged kit that your dad helped kind of shape and design. And, to reach back and talk about the reels a little bit, and then to reach ahead and talk about guides a little bit, and to put that together, you need that. And the American Tackle Tie Forged kits have a tab on the website when you're selecting. You know, you can go through and go, okay, I want the micro ones and I want them in polished. And there's a tab that'll say 1,000, 2,000, 2,500, 3,500, 4,000 to 5,000. And you're like, this is new. And Bob went through and set up these kits to make sure that every box is checked. Like, okay, you got your blank, perfect. Okay, you're going to fish it with this 2,500 Stratic. Okay, that 2,500 reel needs to have this guide train with a size 20 high frame. You know, or if you're going to use that same guide train, but you're going to crappie fish and you're going to use a 1,000, you're not going to use the same reel. So there's no reason to use the same guide train.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, great points there. And just to circle back to the lure part there, the weight, right?
I forgot. See, we're kind of constantly throw each other curveballs. We're doing this on purpose.
It's all good.
Don't let us out behind the rod bench here very often. So when we get out here, we kind of don't know what to do.
We're all off the guardrail. You know, whatever. The weight, you know, obviously your bait that you put on that hook for your drop shot rig, that's probably the most important part. But the weight, though, that's a crucial aspect of the drop shot.
For sure.
Most guys are going to be using tungsten, you know, an eighth of an ounce. You could go down to as little as, you know, probably a 16th of an ounce if you're fishing, you know, shallower water, things like that. But nonetheless, eighth of an ounce is usually my go-to size for, you know, almost any depth of water. Once you get into maybe the, you know, 20 plus range, we might up that to like a 3/8 or maybe a 1/4 ounce just to get that bait down a little bit faster. With an 1/8 ounce, you're going to be sitting there for a few seconds waiting for that bait to hit the bottom. But 1/8 ounce tungsten teardrop shaped, you know, weight, that's going to be my go-to. So
yeah, it really is. And you kind of have to, in terms of the weight shape, you know, we had talked about that earlier, like kind of pre-show when we were trying to remember what all we wanted to talk about. But a lot of drop shot weights, they usually come in three kind of distinctive shapes. You'll have just a round ball, and then you'll have like a straight cylinder weight, and then you'll have your teardrop. And you do have to be careful, just like we make sure we pick the right hook keeper, you need to make sure that you're picking the right weight, because here in Florida, if we are fishing around some real snaggy cover, like wood and things that is not part, not saying that it's not part of the bottom, but it's like, it's something to like easily get hung up on. You want to fish like that cylinder weight, because that cylinder weight will like slide through wood. It will like go in and out of grass easier, just because there's less like, you know, roundness to it. So it'll duck in and out of like our hydrilla and stuff. And it doesn't disturb the bottom very much. So if you are like fishing it around a bed and you need to try to be real delicate, you can set that cylinder weight in there a little better than if you had a, like a round ball. But on the other side of that, if you're fishing like pea gravel and different rocks, you have to be careful that when you drop that cylinder weight in there, it will snake its way into a place that you can't get it back out of. So it will fall through there and get you hung up way more often than like a larger profile weight in the same weight. So like all the weights you were talking about from 1/8 and 1/4 and 3/16 and 3/8, they're going to make them in a cylinder, and then they're going to make them in a round ball, and then they'll make them in like a teardrop. And you have to choose wisely, because I don't know if anybody's bought tungsten recently, but tungsten has never been cheap. It's, I mean, I will always buy it and I'll always use it.
Of course.
But there's no reason to choose the wrong one, because you'll be fishing in the bottom of that tackle box for another weight on your first drop, if you're dropping that cylinder into rock, or if you're dropping like a ball weight into a brush pile. It's just, it's super frustrating.
So we talked about the setup, right? We talked about the rod build. We talked about our reel selection, line selection, lure setup. Let's talk real quick about just how each of us fish a drop shot. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, a lot of people would just assume, oh, you throw it out there, let it sink to the bottom and give it a couple twitches or drag it along and catch fish.
Pick it up.
And hey, it might be that easy where you're fishing at. But a couple tips, or at least one tip that I would pass along is the way that I like to fish a drop shot, and hopefully this reference will make sense to a few of you guys out there. It's a lot like fishing a devil's horse. I fish a drop shot really, really slow. So if you're familiar with fishing a devil's horse, you know, throw it out there. You don't really want to make a lot of commotion, a lot of movement with a devil's horse. You might give it one little, you know, twitch or a couple twitches, and then you just let it sit there.
Yeah.
I fish a drop shot very, very similar. I'll throw it out there. I'll let it sink to the bottom. I'm going to let it sit there for, you know, maybe 5-10 seconds, and I'm going to give it a couple little twitches or nudges, but I'm not really pulling it towards me. I'm not dragging it on the bottom. I'm just kind of leaving that drop shot in its place, stationary. The one thing I am making sure of is my weight is on the bottom, right? I got to have bottom contact. So again, I'll throw it out there, let it sink to the bottom until my line goes slack, flip the bail over, reel up a little bit of slack, and just kind of make sure I have bottom contact and I'm tight with, you know, my line and there's no slack. And then I'm going to give it a couple twitches, let it sit, and kind of do that over and over, maybe 2 or 3 times. Now, if I'm not getting a bite, maybe I'll pull it a little bit towards me, maybe 6-10 feet or so, and just kind of rinse and repeat. Yeah. I, for me, a drop shot is something that, again, it's finesse fishing. I'm not trying to mimic something that's you know, super erratic or that has a lot of action in the water.
Fleeing.
Exactly. It's more of something that's kind of just sitting there that might be injured, and it's an easy meal for a fish. So that's kind of how I fish it. Again, conditions and things like that can vary, and maybe the fish are in a super, you know, feeding frenzy and you really want to give it a lot of action, then, you know, maybe that'll work. But for me, I'm kind of, you know, slower, leave that drop shot in place. And when you have a, you know, a bait like a robo worm or even a trick worm or, you know, a hand poured straight tail bait, it takes very little movement for that worm to, you know, have kind of that
S-wave action. If you didn't say that.
Yeah. So you don't have to sit there and, like, you know, thump your rod tip up and down or pull that bait towards you like a Carolina rig. You want to leave it in place, leave it stationary. That's where the extra fast action on your rod, DSA-22, for example, that's where it shines, is being able to leave that bait in one stationary location and just give it the slightest little twitches. And trust me, your worm is doing all kinds of action, even though you're barely moving that rod tip. So that's just kind of how I typically fish a drop shot.
I agree with Hunter. Let's get out of here. Yeah. But I think that's a great point, and I was going to say it if you didn't say it. But I fish it a little faster, but I fish it more in terms of, like, I'm in an area where, like, I want it to be, especially in Florida, it's like if I want it to be on a shell bar, if I cast it out, I'm using that weight, that tungsten, through the sensitivity of the line and the rod to feel around a little bit. Because there are times where if you don't feel shell or you don't feel a certain type of rock or you don't feel like the brush pile, you're in the wrong spot. So it will give you a really good, it gives you a lot of feedback, and you kind of have to learn how to trust it, because like you said, some people might throw it out and be like, reel it and be like, I don't feel anything. I don't feel anything. And it's just like, you're taking it all away from it. So you do, not that you have to let it sit, but you have to make sure that, you know, you are tight, you're tight to the bottom, you have the right weight, you have all of that lined up. And then once you're like, okay, that's it, and then you start going like, okay, well, I just need to make sure that I'm, you know, I'm this far out and at that angle, and that's the shell bar, and, you know, you can throw out over here and then, like, go, oh, no, it's not there, slide over. And you can move quickly, and then all of a sudden, okay, that's where I need to be. And then you can just, you can hammer it from there. So it's a better, like, search bait than you would think. You know, like, I would fish it like you fish it once you're dialed.
Right.
You know, once you're like, yep, that's it right there. And of course, the extra fast is exactly when we had it on the board, it's very telling that it's extra fast. And it's the same reason that we fish an extra fast blank for like a jerkbait, because you can just go like that and that's all it takes. And that jerkbait is working, right? If you were throwing, you know, some kind of really like slow or fiberglass blank, you would really have to work that thing to get it to move like this, as opposed to just going, and it, the blank or the bait moves almost exactly the length of your rod tip that moves. So,
So
don't overwork it, I think is what I have to, and I tell people the same sometimes on a flat, like don't overwork it because it's doing more than you think it is.
Correct.
And they get to like reeling too much and dragging it around, and that looks very unnatural, you know, if you're going to fish it like that. So, yeah.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered it, Chris. I mean, from top to bottom, we've covered reel and line and the whole lure setup, even how to fish a drop shot. And again, why I consider the drop shot to be such a versatile, you know, setup and rod is because, you know, I think the common, you know, thing that people think about is, oh, well, that's a finesse, you know, lure. I'm only going to fish that in super clear, deep lakes. And that's completely wrong.
100%.
You can, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you can fish a drop shot on shell bars in Florida. You can fish it in, you know, some of the, you know, lighter grass in Florida. You can fish it up and down the Tennessee River, Pickwick, Gunnersville, all those kind of places, whether it's, you know, spawn, pre-spawn, even post-spawn out on the ledges. You know, you might have to go up a little bit on your weight size if you're fishing it.
For sure.
And you're fishing in, you know, 20, 30 feet, you might have to go up to a half ounce. And of course, our guys up in the northern states that are fishing for big smallmouth, drop shot is an absolute staple. I'm sure a lot of those guys probably have five or more drop shot rods in their boats.
They've got them all out. So for sure.
So anywhere from Florida up to, you know, Minnesota, and then of course all the way out to California and the West Coast, drop shot rod is a must to have in your arsenal. Don't leave home without it, because one way or the other, you're probably going to need it.
Yeah, I think that was probably the best, you know, technique that we could have chosen to kick off this series, because there's going to be some, as we go through, you know, our rod locker of everything we've got, that's going to be like, unfortunately, narrow the field of listeners right down. But for people that build custom rods and go fishing and travel to go fishing and things like that, you know, I'm sure that, you know, even people that don't flip bass out of heavy cover on the day-to-day, they do at some point. So they need to make sure that they've got the right blank and guides and everything set up. And that's why we're here. We're going to always have a building portion, and we're always going to have a podcast portion. So if you miss the building portion, you certainly need to go back and watch it. If you came to the podcast from the building section, hopefully we've answered all your questions. And you can always send us more, but make sure you subscribe to this channel, because this is not going to be the only one. And there is a catalog list of live shows, rod building 101s, and just, there's some fun stuff too. There's stuff where we get out on the water and go fishing.
Absolutely.
So,
and a lot more of these types of videos to come, where we're going to dive into, again, not even just the rod building portion, but also getting out on the water, using these technique specific rods, and going over the full setup, reel, line, lure. And that way you guys will have a little bit more information, and hopefully can take away some good tidbits here and there from these videos. So,
absolutely. So we will see you guys hopefully soon on episode 2, and we're looking forward to it, man. I'm glad I got my left-hand man here, Hunter, beside me for this one again. So,
absolutely. We'll see you on the next video.